Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Matt Beard, 9 years of combination experience, second generation firefighter, a lieutenant on Ladder 1 for Roanoke Fire EMS, and assistant chief with Bedford Volunteer Fire Department. Matt was what I call bit by the fire bug, and after hearing him talk, you will clearly see why. Matt talks about the fire service with so much passion and conviction, it's contagious to go out there and want to better yourself, which we should all strive for. Matt also openly discusses his trials and tribulations when it comes to finding that balance between home life and work life. He didn't have to open up about this, but wanted to get the message out there that there are times when we as firefighters are going to need the help that we provide often, day after day, to the public we serve, and there's no shame in that. With that, I present Mr. Matt Beard.
Hey guys, my name is Matt Beard. I'm a lieutenant with Roanoke Fire EMS in Roanoke, Virginia, currently assigned to Ladder 1. I'm the driver. I'm a second generation fireman. I've kind of been around it my whole life. My dad has always been a volunteer in Lewisburg, West Virginia. I've always been around it, always constantly, you know, loved going to the firehouse growing up, loved smelling the insides of the bay. You know, that for some reason was just, it was toxic to me in a good way. It was something that I always just wanted to be around. I love playing on the trucks, getting my dad's gear. My dad's 6'7". So when I was growing up, getting in his gear, it was like I was wearing a parachute. And you know, it was just the most fun thing. I would ride with him in the parades in town. You know, just things like that. Go to the little family cookouts that they used to have back then. Growing up, I did the whole normal active kid thing. I, you know, played outside. I got really big into sports. I played a couple different sports, but I really latched onto basketball, football. And then at the end of my high school, I started running track. So I kind of veered away from firefighting. I really just went the whole sports route, being a kid, having fun with friends, being a dumb high schooler, partying, all the hoopla everybody does. And then went to college at West Virginia University. Firefighting wasn't even in my brain. Okay. At this point I was like, man, I'm going to go, I want to be a doctor. I liked sports. I was obsessed with sports. I was like, I'm gonna go be a sports medicine doctor, get to West Virginia University. My ACT scores were pretty good. And quickly got a humble check, got humbled my freshman year, and within the first 2 months changed my major from pre-med, because I was going to go the sports medicine route. I changed from that to sports management because I still wanted to be in sports. But I was like, man, I came here to have fun with friends, you know, get a little education, then get a job. 3 years went by. About 2.5. I was on winter break in my junior year. My dad, I was just talking to him. I was like, man, I am done. I'm so burnt out with school. I was very studious growing up. I've never really studied. I'm not trying to brag. I've just always been a person. I've never really had to study test. Mm-hmm. I'm just a good test taker, I guess. And he was like, well, you should. We were actually going to a trip to Boston to see my brother. He was touring with his company. And we're coming through New York. And he was like, FDNY is always hiring. And I was like, huh. All right. I was like, yeah, being a fireman wouldn't be that bad. Like, that'd be kind of cool. So I was the whole trip looking up stats on the FDNY, Boston, big cities. I'm infatuated with cities. I grew up in a small town in West Virginia, like a population of like 3,000, 4,000. Mm-hmm. I'm probably off a little bit, but so I was like, man, I just love cities. I love skyscrapers. I love everything about it, the city life. So I was like, man, this is what I want to do. Then I started looking up the salary and the pensions. And I was like, shoot, FDNY sounds pretty good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I went back to school and I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna start looking into this. Well, then go to summer break. And I don't know if you remember seeing back in 2016, the big floods that happened in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
That was my hometown that happened in.
Okay.
So I actually went out with my dad. The first batch of rain came through. It did a bunch of washouts. And my dad was like, hey, do you want to go look at these spots? So I went out with him. He got permission from the chief. I got to ride in the fire truck just to go look at the different spots. Well, then the proverbial shit hit the fan and it got real bad and I was stuck with him. And he called the chief, was like, hey, he's with me. I'm gonna keep him out of the way. I had zero experience at this point. But just watching what they did, my dad had zero. He's an old man. My dad's 62. I mean, he's old. He's got a bad back, bad shoulders, zero swift water experience. And I watched him. There's a video. If you look up Lewisburg Volunteer Fire Company or something like that on Facebook, there's a video of him and a couple other guys. They tied off to a chain link fence and went and pulled someone out of a house with rushing, and I mean rushing, swift water. So that kind of sparked my interest. And they kind of asked me the next couple of days. At this point, now we're looking for bodies because the flooding was so bad. We had like 20 some missing people. And my dad called me and a couple buddies, and he was like, hey, do you want to come? You want to come look with us? And so we went and looked, and I was like, man, I'm doing something bigger than just myself. I'm out here trying to help my community, and that, lit that fire for me. Did all that, and then I was hooked. Even though, zero firefighting was done. I didn't go in a burning building. I wasn't sitting at a working fire, but I was hooked. I was like, man, this service, the selflessness, I was like, I'm in. So I ended up going back to school for my junior year. So I misspoke earlier. It was my sophomore year that we went on that trip. My junior year, I went back to school, but I got accepted to be in the volunteer fire company back in my hometown, which is 3 hours from West Virginia University, where I was going to school. Somehow I got hooked up with one of the guys on the company. He's a state instructor in West Virginia. He said, hey, they've got this new program. You can do all your learning online and come back on the weekends and your breaks, and I'll do all your skills with you. I was like, man, that sounds like a great idea. I'm already in school. It's the worst thing you could have ever done. I learned absolutely nothing. Thought that I knew a whole lot because I was certified by the end of it. Knew nothing. I didn't know how to catch a hydrant. They'd be like, hey, catch this hydrant. I'd be like, yeah, sure. And I'd go stare at it like, I don't know what I'm doing, but in that process, it really stuck, because I was coming home almost every weekend, just staying at the firehouse, trying to run calls, doing this, doing that. Ended up finding Roanoke City. Roanoke Fire EMS was hiring, so I applied on a whim. I told my dad, I said, hey, if I get this job offer, I'm dropping out of college and I'm going to do this. Like, I'm in college to get a job. If I get a job, I'm done. I'm burnt out, whatever. And so I ended up getting the job, but I had applied to a couple different places, FDNY, I think Philadelphia, maybe big cities, and then Roanoke, because it's 2.5 hours from where I grew up. Get the job, start the academy. One of the worst days of our academy is your SCBA day. It's really just to get you familiar, comfortable, and just you're getting the shit kicked out of you the whole day. It's just, field crawls, mass, everything you could think of. We're doing the field crawl first thing in the morning, and it's the day my roommates are moving back into our apartment at college, and I'm crawling through this field like, man, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you need to go back to college. You need to go have fun. I was like, no, stupid. You're here. You're in it. You're committed to it. Finish it out. And originally, Roanoke was a stepping stone for me. I was like, I'm gonna come here for a couple years. I'm gonna build that resume a little bit, get some experience, and I'm going big city. I get to Roanoke and just fell in love, dude. The guys are phenomenal. Coming out of the academy, I got assigned to Ladder 7 on B shift. It's the only truck in the city that, or the only ladder that actually operates in the Quint capacity. In their first due, they operate as an engine unless there's another engine on the block with them, and then they will do the search or whatever the other responsibilities might be. And I got linked up with two of the best officers you could possibly imagine. My captain, he's actually my battalion chief now, Tom Gurman. He's the greatest man I've ever met. I'm probably gonna get a lot of hate for the things that I'm gonna say about him in this podcast, but fuck him, I don't care. This man, he created me. He lit that fire in me even more and gave me the tools and the stepping stones to be where I'm at today. And then my lieutenant was just an absolute firecracker. I mean, they called him Two Alarm Tyrone because it seemed like every time he rode the seat, we would get two alarm fires, like just big. And somehow I was always riding backwards with him when it happened. So I got a lot of really good experience coming out of the academy. All the guys in my academy hated me because I had like 15 fires in the first couple months. Like I was just burning. I'd travel to another station in the city, get a first do fire. I traveled to the retirement station my first day, cleaning dishes after lunch, first do fire. Like crazy. So I didn't, I was there for 4.5 years. I got my paramedic while I was there. Just kind of looked at my career path and decided, you know, if I want to make some more money, I'm already riding an ambulance because we ride both. It's fire and EMS. The firefighters are split kind of 50-50 on, you know, you ride the ambulance one day, ride the fire truck the next day, or however you're station staffed. And I was like, man, I'm already riding the truck. I like knowing as much as I can. I said, I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna go to paramedic school. I'm gonna get some more money. I'm gonna get paid the most I can to ride this truck, but I also want to know the most I can so I can help out the best I can. You know what I mean? So did paramedic school, got through that, and then like 6 months after I got cleared, I'm an AIC. They decided that they were gonna change some things with the medic rotations because we were having that medic shortage that everybody's had and has. And so they made the station 7 that I was at and station 5, which is on the north side. They made both of those BLS only stations. So I got kicked out. I got sent to the oldest station in the city, in the slowest part of the city, in the richest part of the city, right next to the big Roanoke Memorial Hospital. And man, I was so bummed when I found out that's where I was going, because I had all but been told I was going to go downtown to station 1 where I'm at now. And then it didn't happen. But I was like, you know what? It's not the station, it's the crew. It's like, you're going to go have fun. That's me. I joke constantly. I'm constantly trying to laugh, you know, have fun, whatever. I was like, just go make the best of it. And I got there, and man, I had a blast. I hated the assignment. Hated the assignment. I love my crew. We had so much fun. There was one day, everybody on our crew, our stomachs hurt from laughing so hard all day. Like it was just one of those days. We weren't very busy, but when we were at the station, we're just having a good time, making the best of it. And a lot of people like the slower station, but I've learned as my career has kind of progressed, I want the action. I want to be running calls. I want to be running fire calls, obviously. You know, but I want to be there. If there's something going on, I want to be there. You know, I used to always say that, you know, man, I hope we get one today. And I had an old salty lieutenant. He looked at me one day and he said, "Well, if we do get one, I hope it's your fucking house." And I looked at him and I went, "Well, let me tell you something, LT." I said, "Fires are inevitable. They're going to happen." I said, "But if they're going to happen, why can't I be there and be the one that's doing the stuff?" You
Right.
know? So I spent about a year and a half there, became eligible to test for lieutenant. So I tested surprisingly well. There was a big test pool, but they also had a lot of spots that they were filling because we had a big mass exodus right around COVID and right after. I ended up getting promoted to lieutenant and got sent to station 1 on B shift. So I stayed same battalion, same shift. And we don't have truck specific assignments in Roanoke City, but at my station, we kind of have the officer, captains ride the engines, first lieutenants ride the seat of the ladder truck, and then lieutenants are essentially like your driver, your engineer rank, but they'll hop over if the captain or first lieutenant's off and ride the seat. So I'm the driver of Ladder 1, which is our only tiller truck in the city at this point. Been there for a year and a half, it'd be 2 years in June. Man, just been absolutely soaking it in, loving every second of it. I've got the best group of guys that I work for, and I like to say that. I've heard a lot of people on here say, you know, I work for the guys, and I believe that wholeheartedly. I absolutely love where I'm at, love all my people, and we just all young, hungry. There's not one person that just walks around just, meh, you know, I don't want to be here. Not everybody's like, last night I made a size up PowerPoint for my guys. We did it at 9 o'clock last night, just sitting at the station. We weren't doing nothing. We were talking in the kitchen. I was like, "Hey, let's go do a size up training." We went and did that for an hour, just talking. Then we started looking up YouTube videos and watching other videos and, "Hey, give me a size up on this one." I mean, you know, it's just stuff like that, just constantly eating, just hungry. Yeah, that's kind of, I'm a little long in the tooth, but that's my story.
No, it's also I was letting you roll with it, but it definitely sounds like you got bit by the bug and you got bit hard, and it shows with how you speak for sure. With that being said, can you explain to us how
Or can you explain why firefighters should, at least when they're on duty, have that sense of pride and wanting to get better? Because you know as well as I do, man, we have people here that they come in, they treat the job just for a paycheck, for the benefits, for the schedule. But why is it important, especially for those who are kind of like you and I, to hear why we should carry ourselves that way?
Like you said, you've got all the people, a lot of people that come in and they just there for the paycheck. And I don't know why you would just do this for the paycheck. It's dangerous. You lose a lot of sleep. You have home problems and you don't get paid that much. It doesn't make sense to me. For me, obviously we're here for the public, but my biggest purpose at this point in my career, especially as an officer now, is my people, my crew. I'm hungry every day I go to work to make sure that they all get home tomorrow. That's my number one. I'm constantly working with guys and trying to instill the importance of our job is not safe, but how can we be the safest and the best trained, best prepared to be able to go home tomorrow? And that's kind of my biggest thing. And luckily for me, especially where I'm at, I'm all the guys have bought in. They share the same mindset. I mean, sometimes, you're on the medic truck and you kind of get down in the dumps and you don't want to do much. You're going to
Right.
be up all night, all that stuff. But for the most part, everybody is just all in all the time.
Okay. So, with that being said, what is your definition of professionalism?
I've heard a lot of different things about professionalism. To me, it's more of just doing the job at hand, doing whatever it may be, a lift assist or a working fire, an extrication, a fire alarm, doing the best job that you can for the people, but also for yourselves. Going into a fire alarm and you're walking through somebody's house and no one's in there. Don't walk around and mess with their stuff. Don't, you check what you need to and you get out of there. But then also, being the best prepared that you can be for the job. You get all there. It happens everywhere. I've seen it at work. I've seen it in the other departments that I've been a part of. You get on scene, there's people that don't even have a clue what they're doing. It's like, how can you say that you're professional? How can you willfully or willingly take your paycheck knowing that you don't even know what you're doing? For me, the biggest thing is just being the best prepared to give the best outcome in the most efficient way. Because efficiency for me is huge, and that to me also goes back to the people that want to be there for the job and the love of the job versus just being there for the paycheck. You can look in a crowd in a room full of people, full of firemen. You can point out the ones that are there for paycheck. It's easy.
Definitely. Okay. Love the answer. With that being said, my next question for you, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So I've thought about this one a lot. Like I said, our job obviously is inherently dangerous. But for me, aggressive is, pushing the boundaries to get that desired outcome. I constantly rattles in my head when we get on big calls, risk a lot to save a lot, risk a little to save a little, risk nothing to save nothing. I don't like the whole risk nothing to save nothing. I'm still gonna you get a fully involved structure fire. I'm still gonna give everything that I've got. I'm gonna be as aggressive as I can. Even if I'm in the yard spraying through windows and opening up, I'm gonna do everything that I can to give the absolute best outcome possible. And that's the whole, you've got searchable space. I'm on a ladder truck now. That's constantly in my head, looking at working fires we go to and this and that. And I'm constantly looking, okay, where can we search? We had a fully involved minus one room back in September. And I tried to go search the room, and my first lieutenant, he grabbed me. He's like, "Hey, dummy! Like, we're not going in here." It's like, "Oh, my bad. I saw a room that wasn't lit off. I was just going to go search it real quick." I mean, boarded up, abandoned structure. We knew everybody was out. Still, that aggressiveness was just there,
Right.
and it doesn't just go with searching. Pushing that hose line down a hallway. It's scary. I don't care what anybody says the first couple times. Every now and then I still get caught in some hairy situations. I'm like, man, this one's tight. I don't know about this. But getting that aggressive mindset, that aggressive nature to be like, no, like buckle down and do your job. Push down this hallway because not only are you going to fix the problems, you know, but now the search team's going to be able to come in behind you and make sure nobody's in here. Now all the other things are going to happen. So, and even being aggressive, we're a super aggressive EMS department. I'm not a, I'm a paramedic on paper. That's about all I claim to be. But there's, we've got our rescue supervisors and a lot of our medics are top-notch, aggressive, doing everything they can for that favorable outcome, like I said.
Okay. So with aggressiveness, I mean, it seems like the Virginia area, you know, the Bedford County area, some of the individuals listening might not know, but you're also the assistant chief with Bedford. So between Bedford, I believe it's Forest, what are some other departments you guys run with? Bedford, Forest, there's
There's
another
Manita
one.
is right at Smith Mountain Lake.
Okay, Manit. And then there's one more. I
Stuartsville is
regularly,
another one in Bedford County.
okay, I regularly follow a lot of those departments, and it's always mission focused, mission driven mentality. So I'm pretty sure it's probably safe to say that Roanoke Fire doesn't have that issue. Like when the guys and the gals show up to work, they're there to for work. So how do you keep that mindset going and juggling between the two departments? Because you know sometimes you might hear somebody say, "Hey, this isn't Bedford." You know what I mean? Like I'm sure it happens.
All the time.
So how do you balance that?
It's tough. When I got assistant chief a couple years ago, and had some personal stuff come up, so I gave it up last year, and then I got it again this year. First day back to work, everybody saluted me when I walked in. Hey, chief. I'm like, no, I'm lieutenant. I'm at work.
Right.
I'm not in Bedford. And the same thing when I was nothing in Bedford last year, people would come to me. I'm like, I'm just a fireman, guys. And at the end of the day, that's all we are. No matter what your rank is, you're a fireman, or firefighter, excuse me. One of the big differences that I see is, especially in Bedford, is that everybody wants to be there. No one's there for a paycheck. You get the different skill levels. Luckily, we're fortunate in Bedford that a lot of the guys that run in Bedford work for Lynchburg Fire Department or Roanoke Fire EMS. So we've got a lot of guys that are already doing this on a career level. And then we're very fortunate in Bedford that we've got some really nice equipment, some really nice rigs, and some of the best tools that you could ask for. And we go to a lot of very interesting dynamic types of calls, a lot of fires. I don't know how there's any structure standing in Bedford County with the amount of fires we go to. A lot of extrications, a lot of cut jobs. I mean a lot. I think everybody hits a Bedford County line and they don't know how to not burn buildings, and they don't know how to drive. It's insane. I don't understand it, but at the same time, like, that is the most invaluable experience you can get. And that's, everyone tries to shit on the guys from Bedford all the time. But a lot of the guys from Bedford, almost all of them that work in Roanoke City, are at least a lieutenant now. I've gained so much experience from being in Bedford and not just being the guy that's backwards. Now I get to make decisions that have grown me as a person, as an officer, as a firefighter, to the man that I am today, to where I'm more comfortable running decisions. And running calls, being in command of things, making those decisions inside, all that kind of stuff. And I think the, when you exuberate confidence, people buy in. And that's my biggest thing, is I just try to be confident in everything that I do. And every now and then, I'll get a little, I don't know. And I'll ask the guys. I tell the guys all the time, just because I'm an officer doesn't mean that I don't want your opinion. We'll be doing training, and guys will say, we did something at work the other day where we were lifting a car with a ground ladder. One of my guys wanted to put the step chalk on the other side. I said, hey, let's put it over here. And we had a big discussion, and he was like, oh no, you're right. We're just going to do what you said. And I said, no, we're not just doing what I said. I want to have a conversation about it. Like, we're training. If we're on a call and I say, hey, this is what we're doing, that's not the time for us to have the conversation. I said, but here training, I love hearing what you guys have to say, because you're going to teach me stuff. I'm going to teach you stuff. It's not a one-way street. I think that another big thing is giving the guys that you work for that confidence that their input is valued, that they're not just a hose puller or a door forcer. They are a valued member of your company, your crew, your truck, whatever it may be. And that's the one of the big things that I really try to portray to my guys is I truthfully value their opinion, and their mindset, and they're going to see things that I'm not going to see. I've been on plenty of calls where, as the officer on riding the seat, I'm thinking 8 steps ahead. I'm trying to think, all this other stuff. And then the guy riding backwards could be like, "Hey, you want me to grab this too?" And it's not even something that I thought of, but I'm like, "Absolutely. That's a fantastic idea." We've got a coke plant in Roanoke, had a fire alarm there. And the guy riding backwards on the ladder with me that day, he was like, "Hey, you want me to grab the sprinkler bag?" I'm thinking of where we're going, ventilation tactics. I'm thinking of all this other stuff. And I was like, I stopped for a second. I was like, "Dude, thank you." Like, yes. Like, guys like that make our job so easy. I gave him a hug after the call. I was like, "Dude, you make my job so easy. Like, it's unreal." And that's just because when you promote that kind of culture, people buy in, and then it's just enjoying the job and being efficient at that point. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's what I got for that one.
Would you say that individuals like I might butcher his last name, but Chief Brad Kesey?
Creasy.
Creasy. Creasy,
Yep.
sorry. I know he's not chief anymore. I believe he took a
Yeah.
higher up. He's up in there. He's up
Yeah,
in
he's the
there.
top official in fire for Virginia. He's the executive director of VDFP, which is the fire programs.
Okay. Would you say, but having individuals like him and Thomas and, the guys that came before you that established that mindset also helped you when it came to to the career side?
Absolutely, absolutely. Maybe not as much Brad, because I'm a transplant in Bedford. I've only been here since 2020. But I obviously bought in and hit the ground running here. But especially that captain that I was talking about, his name's Tom Gurman. He's a battalion chief in Roanoke City. Just the give a shit that he had in me created the give a shit that I have. Everyone would constantly say, "Oh, you're one of Gurman's boys." I'm like, "Hell yeah, I'm one of Gurman's boys." Everybody, they would talk about, "Oh, you guys gonna do night?" He's big in training. Everybody, "Are you guys gonna go do night ops tonight?" I'm like, "Maybe. Do we only work in the daytime?" I mean, everyone's constantly like, "Oh, as soon as we hit this time, we're done. We're only running calls and then we're gonna eat dinner and we're gonna go sit on the couch." Like, no. We don't just work during the day. If someone wants to go do, I've told every new guy, every firefighter that I've ever had that's worked with me, like, "Hey man, it doesn't matter the time of day. If you want to go train, you come get me. We'll go do something." We just lost one of our rookies. He just got off probation and got moved to a different station, but he was constantly going out and throwing ground ladders, and he would wait till like 9:30 at night to do it. And I'd be like, "Hey, why don't you throw them during the day?" And he's like, "Well, I'm doing all the other chores." Like, "All right, great. Are you throwing them tonight?" He said, "Yes." "All right, let's go throw them." We go out on the back pool and we just start throwing ground ladders. And his thing was trying to throw a 28 on the concrete. And he's a shorter guy. And I was trying to tell him, it's all about leverage and your mechanics. And he just couldn't get it, couldn't get it. And I said, "Watch me." And I got it. I've thrown a lot of ground ladders, especially with Chief Gurman when he was my captain. And I got it, but I've got the mechanics somewhat down. I'm not going to say I'm a master by any means. And he just looked at me and I was like, "Dude, we're going to keep working till you get it." And the next day we came to work, we did it a couple more times, and then he got it. And the smile on his face, he just felt accomplishment. You know what I mean? And I was like, this is what it's about.
So, how important is it for individuals to find that Chief Gurman that you have? Because to me, it's individuals like that that promote and facilitate people to give a shit. Because we have those critics, and I'm sure you got your fair share that are like, "Oh, night ops and into training," which is it's crazy to me that we have people to this day that think training is a nuisance for what we do.
Yeah, I think it's huge. If you're fortunate enough in your career, whether you're a career volunteer, it doesn't matter, or both, if you're fortunate enough to find someone like that, man, latch on. My first 8 months, we had the next guy up on seniority on our crew with out of recruit school. He was pretty toxic. He was a good medic. He was fun to be around, but he was like, fuck this training. I'm not doing this. Gurman doesn't fucking care about us, blah, blah, blah. And of course, being the young, dumb guy that I was, I bit in because I liked hanging out with the guy. We would go get beers every now and then on our off days, all this stuff. And then he ended up quitting right after I got off probation. And I walked up to Chief Gurman. He was my captain, obviously, at the time. And I just apologized. I was like, I'm so sorry. I said, I was a complete shitbag for the last couple months. And I see it. I'm sorry. I'm all in. And finding that person is just so crucial. And it doesn't even have to be an officer. It could be a firefighter. If you find somebody that has that much give a shit for you, bite it and hold on. 'Cause to me, it completely changed my trajectory, changed my career and who I am. He didn't just grow me as a fireman, he grew me as a man. I got promoted and I was talking to him one day and I just thanked him. And he was like, oh, you did all the work. I was like, no, sir. No, sir. I said, I wouldn't have had any of this work ethic, any of this give a shit, as I like to say, if it wasn't for you. I've had firefighters that are the same way that, they just, there's something about them. They've got that infectious desire that people just latch onto. And, if you find it, don't let go, like I said, because it's gonna help you. It's gonna take you places. It's gonna make sure you get home at the end of the day. Obviously, there's certain situations that it doesn't matter what we do. You could do everything right, but Murphy's Law comes into effect at some point. But yeah, that's my biggest thing is just finding those people. Excuse me, finding those people and just staying with them. Don't worry about the crap bags that are just here for a paycheck and walk in now. Fuck this place. I don't want to be here. This is stupid. I hate this job. Well, if you hate the job, leave. Like I said earlier, we don't make a whole lot of money. It creates problems at home for almost everyone. There's other jobs. I'd go work at McDonald's, go flip burgers. I'll see you back in 6 months when you decide to come back. I can't tell you how many there's been at least five people in the almost 8 years I've been in Roanoke. At least five people that I know of that have left and then come back. It's like, I told you you're gonna be back, man. Where else can you work 10 days a month, get paid pretty decent? It's not great, but I mean, if you're smart with money, you can easily raise a family on it. And have fun, cut up all day, train, get in shape, do all the things that you enjoy doing, or at least I would think, or sit on the couch if you're at a slow station. I don't like that idea, but that's what a lot of people want to come do. It's like, but then they complain about it. Dude, you're getting paid to sit on the couch and watch a movie. What are you complaining about? You know what I mean? It's like, it's baffling to me. I don't understand it. And then, it's those same people that shit on volunteers. Like, I'm proud to be a volunteer. There's not a career department. There's Bedford County is mainly EMS. They're all on ambulances. So the volunteer departments are the ones that bring the fire trucks. If I live here, I want to make sure that not only me, but all my friends that live here have the best services that come, and that doesn't just come with the trucks and that the apparatus and the tools. It's the people that are on it. And that's kind of the sales pitch that I gave my wife when we moved here. It's like, I said, if something happens to us, do you want the best people to show up? You just want some Joe Blow that's just like, oh, I'm fat, I'm out of shape, I got a full beard. Hope your house doesn't burn down. She said, oh, I want the best. I said, so then why should no one else get the best? I'm not saying I'm the best, but I think I'm decent at what I do. You know what I mean? And she was like, okay, I get it. And it just kind of went from there.
With that being said, you mentioned the volunteers. So outside of Roanoke, what kind of realistic training do you guys try to bring for your members to get, especially the members that aren't career firefighters, to get that experience?
We do drills twice a month, that'll range from a bunch of different topics, aspects. I know 2 years ago, I took a big leave last year. I had a whole bunch of personal stuff going on. I'll dive into that here in a little bit, but so I wasn't really involved last year too much. I had like a 6 month leave, and up until then I was pretty out of it too. But 2 years ago we did a man in the machine. We brought PL Vulcan came in. We did a man in the machine class. A bunch of guys from Cornelius came up to take the class with us. We try to promote the Bedford County Truck School as much as we can. We try to make sure that these guys know that like training is wanted, training is needed, and if you want the training, if you find somewhere, go take it. Me and a couple other guys, Thomas, and you interviewed Stacy last year. We always and Chief Gurman, we go up to Andy Frederick's every year. We didn't go last year because all the craziness going on, but we've tried to make that a new tradition and trying to promote more people to go to that. I've been talking to the guys on my crew all the time, like, hey, come up. It's a great time and you're going to learn a lot of stuff. It's not hands-on, but you're going to sit, you're going to hear how different people do things. You're going to get different mindsets. You're going to talk to other people that are there just attending that how they do it. Just constantly trying to keep people hungry and let them know that training is appreciated and welcome.
And you mentioned you started out as a volunteer, so did I, man. I always have love for volunteers, especially the volunteers that are there because they give a shit, you know what I mean? Like they have that sense of pride. And unfortunately, I know from my area at least, the days of volunteers, it's dying. You're not getting a lot of members. And if you are, when you tell them like the amount of hours that are required, to balance that and family life, it's hard. But I know that without me being a volunteer first, I wouldn't be who I am today. So I always have a special place in my heart for true volunteers that actually care about the job.
Oh, absolutely. And, going back to being the whole second generation fireman, if it wasn't for growing up around it with my dad, I don't know what I'd be doing now. I definitely wouldn't be talking to you. I definitely wouldn't be in the position that I'm in because I don't think that that ever would have been there, when he would come home from fires when I was real little and, be going with friends or doing this or doing that. And I'd ask my mom, like, where's dad? Like, oh, he's on this fire here. He's doing this there. And he'd come home and be like, man, my dad's a hero. It's what every kid thinks about firemen. And when they would do the public education, come to the schools and he'd come to my class and there'd be a couple of them and I'd make sure everyone in my class knew, like, hey, that big guy's my dad. You know what I mean? Just stuff like that. It's just, and that's all volunteer. That's not career. And it got me my start. And obviously here in Bedford, the volunteering here and especially in Bedford and Forest, it's a different animal. It's something that I never experienced in West Virginia growing up because, I mean, it is short of the paycheck, it is a career department. I mean, it's efficient. It's the way that scenes are ran, the way that we operate, it's just so professional, and efficient. And it's baffling. Like I called my dad after a couple months of being here. I was like, Dad, you're not going to understand how far behind you guys are in Lewisburg. Cause over here, I mean, it's just an extension of Roanoke. Like it's crazy. And, I can remember one of the couple fires I ran in Lewisburg before I came to Roanoke. I mean, it was just like, they're doing what they can with what they've got. But like there was one, I caught the hydrant on the first in engine, ran up, still somehow managed to be on the first line going in the door. And no one else when it like it's just like it's cowboy time. And I don't understand how it's worked, but it has. I hope to God, knock on wood, that nothing ever happens. But I've wanted so many times, but now I've got a family. I can't just go back and do classes with them and this and that. But I've wanted so many times to go back and just show them a better way, show them a more efficient way. But at the same time, you can't make people come to calls if they're volunteers.
That's right.
You got to want to be there.
That's
And
right.
a lot of those members are getting a little older, have families, come out when they can, if they can, but that's not, there's not like an expectation. You have to meet this amount of calls to be able to be eligible to run or whatever it might be, and it's just, everyone's just hurting for members in that area. And it's just what they do with what they can.
And there are a lot of places like that that just, hey, it is what it is, and they do with what they have to deal with. So I totally get it. I totally get
Yeah,
it.
I was taught before I came to Roanoke, they were trying to get me start driving some, which is mind blowing to me because I had no business being in the driver's seat of a fire truck. And they taught me how to put it in pump gear, which I had no clue what I was doing. Put it in pump gear, and then they said, "Come out and hit this button right here. It says preset." I said, "All right, man, I can do it. I'm in now.
Right.
I'd like to take preset off of every truck that is ever made. I think it's a I understand it has its places, but me personally, Matt Beard's opinion, I think is the dumbest thing you could put on a truck because it just promotes complacency. It promotes people to not learn their job and know how to be not a driver, but an operator.
Right.
And to me, that is a huge difference."
Right. No, I'm with you on that. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole with the driving thing, man, because especially with what I'm seeing now, nowadays, we're taking these new people. Once they hit their probation, it's like, all right, what how fast can we get them checked off? Because we need drivers. And it's like,
Right.
that's not the way to do it. And one of these days, doing that shit's gonna bite somebody in the ass. Because yes, you can easily teach somebody, yep, you pull this lever, twist this knob until you see a certain number, set it and forget it, you're good to go. But we're not teaching them how to troubleshoot. We're not teaching them how to hear what the truck's doing, what exactly we are having them do. It's just like a monkey, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Anyways, yeah. I don't
That's something
even
that
want to go down that road.
I'll go down it all day, man, because I'm on the same I'll die on the same sword as you. That's something that Chief Gurman had instilled in me when I was starting to kind of do the check off to become a driver, especially on Ladder 7 in the city, because you're doing both.
Right.
It's a quint, so I learned how to pump off that truck, but you got to learn how to do the aerial operations and how to be an outside operator for a ladder truck. And man, I can't tell you how many mornings we would go lift the cab and just go look. And I had no clue what I was looking at. I'm not a mechanically inclined person. But I was there. I was doing everything that I could. We'd crawl under the truck all the time. He'd be showing me all the pump housing and the pipes going through, and this is this. And like, that man is just, I don't understand how he has the amount of knowledge in his brain that he does, because I mean, he knows everything. It seems like it's unreal. And but he instilled that in me, like, "Hey, I'm not gonna clear you till you're an operator." He said, "When I send you away, if you've got to go drive on another station, I'm putting my stamp on it." That he never actually said this, but it's the way I took it. "I'm putting my stamp on it that you know what you're doing, and you can operate the truck." And that's really where that operator driver mentality really started for me, because I remember the first time that I knew I was gonna be driving the next day, first shift, and I'm laying in bed. Like, I'm going to school for the first time, and I'm just laying there, and I'm literally laying in bed with my hands visualizing where things are, what I got to do. If I've got this problem, I'm thinking, run back to your manifold, check all this, check your intake, like constantly doing that, to the point that now, I'm not super worried about it. I'm sure that I could find a hiccup that I'd be like, "Oh, I don't know about this." But at the same time, I'm confident that because of my drive, that I'm going to be able to overcome it in some capacity.
Definitely. Love it. Love it. As far as leadership, you at some point in your career, you decided to take that step to go up for promotion. So my question to you is, what does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader did you want to become?
For me, and it's the cliche, leadership is leading from the front. There's nothing that I would ask my guys to do or ask someone to do that I wouldn't be willing to do myself. I'm not going to say, "Hey, let's go search this room that's fully involved." First off, I would never do that. But at the same time, I wouldn't be like, "Hey, I need you to jump in this window and go search this room," if I'm not willing to do it, because I'm gonna be right there with you in the suck. It's trying to instill those values to not just create a better firefighter or a future officer or whatever like that, but to create a better human being, a better man, better woman, whatever it might be. That's the biggest thing for me, is like, the key leaders that I've always had in my life didn't just better me at whatever the job was, whether it be high school football or basketball or whatever it might be. They bettered me as a person. They instilled certain values in me that don't just correlate to firefighting and sports and all that, just life in general, how to, be respectful, all that stuff. And to me, that is a true leader is gonna find someone and create them, not create them, but help mold them into becoming the best version of themselves in whatever aspect it might be. Whether it be firefighting, family man, a new dad, new mom, because we got a whole lot of those in Roanoke, especially on my crew right now. Just trying to do all that. And the leader that I've got two key leaders that I think about all the time. One was my high school football coach, because I was a shithead in high school. I started going down a path like, a lot of kids do. I was trying to follow things my brother was doing, which was dumb. And he kind of took that and created me, helped me become a football player. But not only that, helped me grow, realize like, oh no, it's not just about, fuck the man and all this stuff. No, like be respectful, show up on time, do tasks, all this stuff. And then the other one is Chief Gurman. I mean, I couldn't even begin. We could be here for days, and I could tell you all the great things that that man has ever done for me, and the lessons that he's taught me, and just the man in general that he's helped form me into being. Hey, Danny, you're muted.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yep.
All right, cool. I just want to make sure I don't want to cough too much for the because
No, you.
I'm getting over something. But with that being said, the fire service, and you mentioned it earlier, the fire service is one of the greatest things, especially when you actually deep dive and get to fall in love with, being into the job. But it also has its downsides where, if you want to get so good at this job, you tend to lose focus sometimes on things that matter, families, wives, kids, things like that. And we all know coming into this job, there are going to be some things that you will miss when you're on shift and whatnot. And you kind of alluded it to it earlier that you had to step back, you had to step away for a minute. And I think sometimes we all need that because I know for me, when I was a volunteer, dude, like weekends, I would literally wonder, all right, who's going to be around in case we get a call to make sure the trucks get out? Like
Right.
you tend to love it so much that you forget and you lose sight of certain things. So I want to let you have the floor with your experience of that.
Yeah. Growing up, I always wanted a family. It was a big thing that I've always kind of been drawn to. Obviously, got into the fire service, and I've been with my wife now for 11 years. We've been married since 29, been married five. Got married and and we moved out to Bedford, and I kind of told her like, the whole spiel that I told you earlier. And then we started trying to have some kids, and we had a hiccup the first time. She had an ectopic pregnancy. So we kind of took a little break, and then we had my son back in 2022, and it was the biggest blessing ever. It taught me just as many lessons as a lot of the leaders that I was telling you about, and just trying to find that balance of do I need to run this call, or do I need to stay home and help her? Do I need to do this, or do I need to do that? And just trying to find that balance. That's the biggest thing. That's been my word of the last 8 months, is just balance. So then, I had my son and everything was going good, got promoted, everything's been great. And then my wife and I were trying for number two. We had a lot of conversations about how many kids do we want? Do we want one? Whatever. And I was like, well, I'd like for him to have a sibling of some kind, because my mom even told her, she's like, well, if we only had one, then your husband wouldn't be here, because I'm a younger brother.
Gotcha.
I was like, dang, it's not a bad point. Like, all right. So we tried. Little did we know, twins running my wife's family. She swore up and down they didn't. She told me she was pregnant with twins. She said she thought it was twins. We went and confirmed, and I was like, oh my God, my life is over. Over, man. And then we found out it was twin girls, and I was like, oh my God, it just keeps coming.
Right.
You know? But then They were due on May 25th of 2024. And on Valentine's Day, my wife called me. She was on her way to work and said, "Hey, I'm having some back pain. I'm having some back pain. I think I need to go get checked out." I was like, "All right, well," I was off, thankfully. I said, "All right, I'm gonna drive you. We'll go to the doctor, get checked out." And they were like, "Hey, the twins are coming today." So they were 25 weeks and 4 days. So we did all that, emergency C-section. They were both born like right at a pound and a half, could fit in my hand. And then starts the next battle, the NICU battle, and surviving. Are they going to make it? It was very hit or miss for the first month, constantly being at the hospital, but trying to find that balance again of I've got a 2-year-old at home. I live 40 minutes away. Like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to continue with work? How am I going to volunteer? At this point, I told my wife, I said, "Volunteering is out of my mind. That place has run for 130 years without me, 140 years without me, however long it's been. Like, they're going to be fine." But then, one big thing is my Roanoke was so supportive.
You're good.
The chief, he called me like the second day and he was like, "Hey, anything you need, it's yours." He said, "You need time off, you run out of time, we're finding it." I had hundreds, and I'm not exaggerating, hundreds of people reach out to me. Text, Facebook, social media, whatever it might be. "Hey, whatever you need, we're here." And so trying to balance all that. Well, then we get home, but we don't have the girls at home because they're in the NICU for the next unforeseeable future. So then I tried to balance, like, all right, how long do I need to stay here before I can go back to work? Because at that point, I hate to admit it, but that was an escape. Going to work, being with the guys, that was what got my mind off of the hell that was my life at that point. So, doing all that and just back and forth constantly, just to the NICU, to work, coming home, trying to be there for my son, trying to be there for my wife. She's got all her postpartum and everything going on as well. And I've got my stuff going on in my head. 6 days after the girls were born, my last grandparent died. So didn't even get to do anything there because I was so worried about my daughters in the NICU. And then, we start making some headway, get them home in June. 2 days after we get the first twin home, because they didn't come home at the same time, go figure. My mother-in-law dies of cancer. So trying to battle that and be there for my wife, but also like trying to be present at work. Everybody at work has been just the absolute best, most supportive people I could have ever imagined. I mean, even when we had the issue at the doctor, I told him, I said, "Tell him it's Matt Beard's wife." And they kind of looked at me. I said, "Just do it," because we were in Roanoke. And we had two engines, two medic trucks, both rescue supervisors, and the nurses and doctors came down. They're like, "Oh my God, I've never seen this many people." I said, "This is what happens when you tell them it's one of their own." We got to get the first one home, and I have to move the car around to the front of the hospital to the pickup. And when I move the car around, the entire battalion was out of service at the hospital to watch us bring my girl home.
That's
The
brotherhood. That's brotherhood right there.
bro, the family. It's crazy. And my wife saw it and she is finally bought in. I hate that it took something like this, to make it happen. But I mean, she's baffled by the family that is the fire service and how close we can actually be. And I've tried to explain to her, but I mean, now she's got to see it. But I mean, everybody's been there every step of the way. Constantly. I mean, I still have people reaching out like, "Hey buddy, you doing good? You need anything? Y'all need food?" I've had people ask if I need money. I could always use money, but no, I'm good, you know what I mean? But it's so constant and it's never ever died off. in the whole year we've been dealing with this, because they're going to be a year old in a month. It's just crazy to think about. But like the whole year, it has never died off. People constantly checking in. How's your wife? How's this? How's that? And it's always been there. So, yeah, I don't even remember what your question was. I'm sorry. I
No,
got
you're
off on a tangent.
good. It's pretty much, I wanted you to have the floor, but it to me that goes hand in hand to pretty much the statement, you hear a lot, the brotherhood's dead, and it just goes to show that it was not true for your situation and very many others. I personally believe that there's always a group of bad apples in every batch that will try to let others see, well, this is why our union doesn't do this, that, or the other, but whenever it comes to a situation where firefighters need to step up for one of their own, man, they never miss the mark.
Full force, and I mean that in every aspect you can think of. It, and that I hope I'm not jumping ahead. I don't know if you've got many more
You're good.
questions, but that also brings me back to the whole, the brotherhood aspect is checking on your people. I had some dark times this year, man. Some dark times. I had a couple talks with a couple people, one being my captain, but I just, it got to the point I was drowning. I was like, man, I'm at the bottom of the ocean. I can't see any light, and I don't know what to do. There was times where I'd come home and just this is gonna sound terrible, but I mean, I told you I'm an open book. There was a time or two I came home, I stared at my gun. I was like, man, I don't go there, but. Like it just got to a point where I was like, I don't know what else to do. The only thing that stopped that was my wife and son finding me. That's it. I was like, man, I'm so exhausted, not just physically, but just the mental exhaustion of trying to be present at work, trying to be present at home, trying to be present at the hospital. Then we get the girls home. I don't know if you know how, I don't care what anybody says, having twin babies at home is not fun.
I can
It's a
imagine.
nightmare. I mean, there's aspects that are fun, don't get me wrong, and I love those little girls to death, but like it is the hardest thing you could imagine. And just the constant, just everything's back and forth and trying to figure out my place now and all this. And then I just randomly got a text message one day from one of my buddies. He said, "Hey buddy, just checking in, you good?" And I texted him back. I was like, "Nah, man, I'm not." And that was the turning point. That one text message, because there was people that I hoped had reached out that didn't reach out as much as I had hoped, but I was too proud, but also too down. And I wouldn't, I at that point I wasn't like, oh, I'm depressed. I was obviously very much depressed looking back now, but there were certain people that I would give little hints to here and there. Like I'm screaming out for help, but no words are coming out. You know what I mean? But then I got that one text that one day. It was from Stacy Wills. He texted me just one day out of the blue, and just checked on me. And we talked for a minute, and I was like, "All right." I looked at myself in the mirror. I was like, "Get your shit together, buddy. Like you got too many people here for you. You got too much going on, too much good." And then I started just finding things that. In any time that I could get to myself that would help me mentally get better, which none of it had to do with going to the doctor and getting put on meds. Because I've gone an anti-anxiety route and that stuff is toxic. I hated it. Getting off of it was one of the worst things I've ever done. And I was like, I will not go back. It's been years. I said, I will not go back to that crap. And so I started, I don't know if you, I listened to a lot of podcasts. If you've heard of DJ Shipley, he was on SEAL Team 6. He was on the Storm Ryan podcast. I listened to one of his one day, and he was talking about just going for a 20-minute walk. Said a 20-minute walk a day. You can do more than one. So I started with just a 20-minute walk. I was like, man, I'll just walk around my neighborhood, listen to a podcast, and just go clear my mind. And that 20-minute walk turned into a 30-minute walk. The 30-minute walk turned into a 45-minute walk. And that 45-minute walk turned into an hour. And then next thing I know, I'm doing like hour and a half walks, like 6, 7 miles, but I'm talking, I'm walking. I'm not just strolling. I'm walking enough to get my heart rate up, to get some exercise, to clear my mind, but not to where I'm like running and like, man, this sucks. I just want to stop. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I would just find that pace. And that, along with a couple other things that I've said, has completely changed me mentally. It gave me that light. You
Right.
know, I'm back at the surface.
Right.
I'm not at the bottom of the ocean anymore. And that, but being able to realize that when you're there, you know, talking to my captain, that was a huge point for me too. Was I'd been thinking it for weeks. But and like I told you earlier, I like to cut up. I'm a jokester. I like to play around, and you know, I try to make everybody laugh constantly, you know. And I still had that front on. No one knew. I mean, everyone knew what I had going on
Right.
personally. They didn't know the stuff that was up here in my head. And you know, how do I put this? Being, I don't want to say man enough, because it's not just men that this happens to, but in
Absolutely.
my aspect, being man enough to come out and say something, I think was kind of the tipping point to start me on my trajectory back to being me, you know? And it just, anybody that's listening, if you get to that point, reach out to somebody. I know everybody says it, and I grew up my whole life. I was like, man, I'll never get depressed. I'm always happy. You know, everything's always going to be great. And never in a million years would I ever thought that I would spend any amount of time just staring at a gun. I never touched it, never did any of that. But I mean, just staring at it for like 5 minutes, and then I'd snap out of it and walk away. It's like, what are you doing, man? But realizing that, reach out to people, you know, do what you need to do. And it doesn't have to be anybody in the fire service. You know, reach out to a childhood best friend. If it is somebody from the fire service, just reach out, ask for help. It's not hard. As soon as you ask, it's there. If you're asking the right people, and you're gonna know, you should already know who the right people are. You know what I mean?
That's a fact. No, that's a
Yeah.
fact. That's a
Yeah.
fact, man. It's one of those things. I think it's hard for us as firefighters because we are the problem solvers. You know what I mean? So anytime it comes to something with us, we feel very hesitant to ask for that help. And I don't know if it's because that's just the way we've endured it. It's been indoctrinated into ourselves, but we are always there to provide the help, but very seldomly ask for it. And so, like, I can somewhat relate to you and the pressure of everything hitting you all at once, because I remember the morning my mom passed away, my sister called and was like, hey, things aren't looking good. She was a hospice at the time. They're like, it's only a matter of time. And I'm like, all right, get up. Actually, my dad called and I was like, I'll meet you there, because I had moved out. And we met up, said our final goodbyes. My mom passes away. That morning, dude, I showed up at my part-time job and I went to work. I didn't even call out. I went to work, and I think back now at how I did everything. I should have never fucking been at that place, because I can tell
Right.
you, dude, we ran like two or three calls that day and I was riding the seat. My mind was nowhere. There's no reason why I should have been there, because I remember I distinctly, we met with the mutual aid department for lunch, because our stations are very close. And like, one of the guys was just like, hey, you good? And I was like, nah, I was like, my mom passed away this morning. And he was like, what the fuck are you doing here? And I'm like,
Right.
here to work, man.
Yeah.
And you know, looking back at it, my mind state wasn't there for any call that came, but I made it through. But like, it's just, there's something about the human emotion, the human element on firefighters, and the stress and everything else, man. You gotta find an outlet for that. And I
Absolutely.
love how you mentioned you went out for a walk, because dude, I had many talks with the Lord when watching my mom go through the second round of all that stuff. I had a lot of choice words for the man upstairs, and it's just human emotion. Why this, why that? But how I finally programmed my mind is, you can't dwell on it. You know what I mean? Like, bad shit's gonna happen. You just hope it doesn't happen to you, but if it does, you just gotta kind of roll with it. Like here lately, man, I've been seeing on TV the St. Jude commercials that come on, and I look at my daughter, who, knock on wood, is okay, but it's like, what would you do in that situation? You know what I mean? Like, that's the cards that these parents are dealt with, and like, they know what they're doing with these commercials, because like, it's a downer when they come on,
Oh
and it's
yeah,
like,
it tugs on the heartstrings for sure,
fuck,
man.
man. And you're just like, you look at your child, and then sometimes I'll notice I'll get frustrated by little things that she does, but she's about to be six. She's just a kid, you know what I
Right.
mean? And it's
Yeah.
like, you got to give her some leeway, man, because you listen to these kids' stories and you're like, fuck, you know, it's just, I don't know how to
Absolutely.
explain it.
Absolutely. And that was something that I had to try to find again, that balance is, once I realized it was like trying, okay, well now I need to be present at home more. Physically I was there, but mentally I was, who the hell knows? You know what I mean? Was constantly getting on my son. My wife and I were arguing a bunch, just constantly bickering. And that's when I started doing the walking, and it really, really, I mean, probably saved my life, honestly. Just getting myself out of that headspace. And then, every little thing that my son would do, I'd just get on him, like, why did you do that? You should know. Like, he was two. He is two. Like, what are you yelling? You there?
Yep, I think we had a
All
little
right.
break. We had a little breakdown in communication. We're all good, but keep going. You're talking about your son and he was two.
Yeah, I was like, he's two. Like, what are you getting on to him for? You need to go figure your stuff out and continue to grow and mold your child into the man you want him to become. And I know he's only two, but he's in the most formidable parts of his life right now. So trying to instill in him, like, not fighting and bickering him with your wife that is his mother and all this stuff. And then, on the flip side, taking that to work. I apologize to my captain, who's phenomenal. He's been amazing through all this, but also my battalion chief, Gurman. I apologized to him. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm drowning. I'm not here mentally. Like, if people come up with ideas, because beforehand I was like, hey, let's go do this training, let's go do that training, let's go throw ladders, let's go do a RIT drill, let's go, whatever it could be. Let's go do a bunch of friction loss on a whiteboard for an hour, whatever. All this happened and I was like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Mentally. But on the outside, I was like, whatever you guys want to do, I'm here. But I don't have the capacity right now to facilitate this training, to lead all of this. You know what I mean? And that was kind of the biggest hiccup. And I'm still dealing with it. The depression stuff is gone. For the most part, I think everyone is a little depressed in their own way, shape, or form at some point. But like the drowning aspect is gone, but like the mental capacity right now is still just like it's building, but it's not where I want it to be. It's not where my guys deserve for it to be, but it's just trying to find that balance of everything. There's only so much room in your brain to think. And I got to provide for my family, but I got to make sure that my family's safe and healthy and all that. But then at the same time, I got to make sure all my guys are going to be fine. And I don't know if you saw my second daughter that came home from the NICU. She spent 129 days in the NICU. She came home on oxygen. She's got a G tube, a feeding tube, all this stuff. We got the oxygen off back in the summer. Well, she got RSV. All my kids got RSV right around Christmas. The one that came home with oxygen, she's got chronic lung disease. We spent the New Year's and the end of 2024 and the beginning of 2025 for a week long in the PICU. And it was another, I don't know how this is going to turn out. I mean, she was circling for a second when I finally got her to the ER, because I worked the day before and got home and I was like, this isn't good. And maybe I can fix her with the stuff we still have. And I went into paramedic mode, just trying to fix my daughter. And then next thing I know, I realized, like, hey, stupid, you're past your knowledge, skill set, and abilities. You need to get her to a hospital like yesterday, and got her there. And then we spent a whole freaking week in the PICU. It's like, looked at my wife, it's like, couldn't have ended the year that we've had in another fucking way than being back at the hospital. You know
Right.
what I mean? Daughter fighting for her life again. And, you know, my guys were there for that. Shit, when I got to the ER with her, my cat, I just texted him, let him know, like, hey, I texted the other officers on my crew. I was like, hey, I'm going, taking Parker to the ER. Her breathing, everything's bad. My captain showed up in the ER room. I've been there for 45 minutes. He's there constantly checking on me. Hey, you need me to bring you blankets, food, water, drinks, whatever. Constantly. All my guys were constantly there. And you know, that's just that balance. They see, they know, they understand that I'm struggling. I'm still there, but you know, they're there too.
Right.
And I know that wholeheartedly.
Right. And you didn't have to share any of that information, but I really appreciate that you did, because even if it's one person, your message of what you went through, what you were looking at doing possibly, but the fact that you didn't goes a long way for us firefighters, first responders everywhere, man, because it's nothing for us to be scrolling through social media or whatever, and then you see such and such took his life for whatever reason. And I guess I would say maybe to them at that point, that was the only way out for them, that they saw, okay, if I do this, everyone else would be better. But at the end of the day, nobody ever wins with that. You know what I mean? But the fact that
Yep.
you it didn't come to that point with you is what's awesome. And the fact that you shared it for others to hear, because you know as well as I do, man, certain firefighters, they have that bravado or persona about them that they're tough, they're macho. Nobody wants to talk about feelings. Nobody wants to talk
Yep.
about like crying and things like that. But that's what needs to be heard and said, man. So thank you for sharing that.
Of
And
course.
hopefully your daughters now are doing a lot better.
They're doing good now. It's just talking to my wife the other night. I was like, "Hey, let's just have a goal of 2025. We're no longer going to the ER or the hospital anymore. That'd be cool for me." But you know, going back to what you said, you know, that's that stigma. You know, I'm the man of my household, and you know, I'm supposed to be the provider. I'm supposed to be the strong one. But there's only so much strength you can have. Sequoia red tree, the redwoods in California, they fall eventually. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, trying to recognize that's the whole point that I wanted to get out was, you know, you're not the first person that's gone through something. You're not going to be the last person that's gone through something. And choosing to end it isn't going to be the option for the people that love and care about you. Because whether
Definitely.
people want to admit it or not, everybody's got someone that loves them.
Definitely.
And you know, for me especially, and it's been like this my whole life, but you know, if I tell somebody, you know, they're my brother, if I tell my friend, I tell my all my a bunch of my friends that I'm close with, I tell them I love them. But I think a lot of people, especially in the fire service, be like, all right, love you, mean it, you know, say stuff like that. Like when I tell somebody I love them, I mean it. I don't say love you mean it. I just say I love you because I love you. You know what I mean? And I tell people all the time, you call me rain, snow, ice, sunshine, 3 in the morning, 8 in the morning, noon. It does not matter. My phone is on 24/7. You call me, I'll be there. Period. And I mean that wholeheartedly because it's the stuff that has helped me, but I've always been like that. I've always just been there for people. I want to be there for somebody before being there for myself, which I think is where I got in the point that I was at, because I was trying to just do instead of taking a step back and be like, hey man, are you good? Like look at myself in the mirror, like are you good? And it's like, but no, dummy, you're not good. Figure some stuff out. Go for a walk, which, like I said, ultimately I think saved my life. But figure your own shit out first and then come back to the firehouse. You know, I was too prideful when all this happened. I was like, no, I need to get back to work. I need to get back to work. It's going to get my mind off of it, which in retrospect, yes, I think it helped.
Right,
You
because
know,
it does.
I
It
got to go
does.
joke with the guys, but
Right.
at the same time, I'm constantly thinking about everything else. And instead of proactively fixing my own problems, my own guilt and everything going on with me, I was just pushing it to the side. Like I'll fix everybody else first. And then when I get time, I'll come back to me with, which at some point you've got to take care of yourself too.
100%, 100%. With that being said, where would you like to see yourself retire or hang it up? Which I mean, you got a long career ahead of you,
Oh
but
yeah.
I always, everyone has goals. Everyone has something that they want to accomplish. So where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
Yeah, it's funny when I first got started, I told myself, I was like, man, you're gonna get a white shirt one day. You're gonna get a white helmet. Talking about Imrano, nothing volunteer wise. And I was like, you're gonna retire a chief, a battalion chief, deputy chief, the chief. Like, you can do it. And I got here, and I was like, man, I don't want any part of that. You know, I was like, they don't ride fire trucks anymore. They got to do a lot of paperwork. My battalion chief is constantly on the phone or sitting in front of the computer. I'm like, that doesn't sound fun at all. You know what I mean? Like, I like getting on the trucks and riding. I'm a little kid every time I get in a fire truck, bro. Every time. You know, I tell my first lieutenant every time I drive him on ladder one, I was like, I tell him almost every day that I drive him. I'm like, hey, have I told you today how much I love driving this truck? And he just laughs. He's like, you're an idiot. It's like, dude, I love it. Like, I smile all the time. Like, it's just so fun. I drive not only a fire truck and a ladder truck, but a tiller truck. That's my job. I'm one of two people. In the 260 people we have in suppression personnel, I'm one of two people that I am assigned, because we don't have specific assignments, but that is my job, is to drive that truck.
Right.
And I take that with the most pride you could possibly imagine. You know, so I've thought about it a lot. I love what I'm doing, man. I love it. Because like I said, I drive the front. Any driving position in Roanoke City is and off is a lieutenant's position. So even tilling is considered a driving position. So that is a technically a lieutenant spot.
Okay.
So I drive the front, but I took spent a little gig tilling in the back. And then me and the other lieutenant will flip-flop if we have the staffing that we're all three officers are on the truck. Excuse me. But yeah, I think I love ladder work. I don't know what it is about it. I love forcing doors. I love throwing ladders. I love ventilation, like the science, the actually thinking of flow path and this and that, you know, all that stuff is just, I'm obsessed with it. And like I said, the first lieutenant is the officer in charge on ladder trucks in Roanoke City, minus ladder seven. They just have a captain. So I want to do what I'm doing now for a while.
Understood.
I'd probably, maybe the rest of my career, if they don't touch me, I might not leave. You know,
Okay.
if they leave me where I'm at, I'm so happy going to work every day. I'm like, I might just ride this one out. But honestly, I wouldn't mind getting to first lieutenant, being that officer on a ladder truck, which for some reason it has the stigma in Roanoke of being a stepping stone. And a lot of people don't like when, you know, someone gets first lieutenant, stays there for a long time. It's like they literally have the most dangerous job in our department. Like, I know engine work is dangerous. Being a captain on an engine is dangerous, but you got a hose line tethered to you or tethered to the truck outside. You shit hits a fan, you turn around, you follow the hose line out. You know what I mean? I know
Right.
sometimes it's not that simple, but like, you're searching a building and shit hits a fan. You got to figure out what the hell you're going to do to get out of there, get your
Right.
guys out too.
Right.
You know, like, it is so dangerous, but there's just something about, I love searching. I teach search at truck school here in Bedford. I'm eat up with ladder truck right now. And I would like to do the first lieutenant role at some point, potentially captain, but right now there's just not the real big desire. I love pumping and flowing water and hydraulics, and I love all that that comes with engine work, but at the same time, there's just something about ladder work that just calls to me, you know what I mean?
Understood. Understood. Was your dad an engine guy or?
So he's just at the volunteer
Right.
house. I think he's just more of an engine
Okay.
guy. They did have an old American LaFrance tiller back before I was even really born, I think, and he enjoyed being on that. But as far as like work specific, job specific, I don't really know. I mean, for the last like 15 years, he's been like the safety officer for him, because
Okay.
he's bad back, bad
Right.
shoulder, like all this stuff. So he's more of like on the outside looking in. But I would say he's probably more of the engine work if I
Okay.
had to guess. But I don't, like I told you though, I mean, it's not a whole lot of like job specific stuff over there. It's just like, hey, let's go. There's a lot of fire in this
Do what you
house.
got
Let's
to
just go put
do.
it out. Hit the
Right.
preset. Let's go. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
But yeah, it's a different world for sure. And I'm not shitting on them because I owe a
Right.
lot to them, and they do a lot of good.
Right.
I just don't understand it where I'm at with my knowledge at this point. I don't understand how it works. It
Right.
blows my mind.
Right. But would you say the fact that the bug hits you in such a good way? I'm assuming that your dad is probably very proud of the firefighter that you have that who you are today, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny. When I first got on, I would call him after, a big fire here, and I would walk him through. I've got a weird memory. I can remember almost every minute of almost every fire I've ever been in. And it's not because I've only been in five fires, and I'm not saying I'm some big macho man fireman. I just have a very strange memory that I can remember things that were said, what I saw. I can tell you play by play the first fire I went in Roanoke. And that was 8 years ago, 7 years ago. So I don't understand how it works, but I would fill him in play by play, minute by minute on every fire that I went in for like the first 2 years. And he would always be asking me questions. He'd see something like a post on Facebook and he'd call and be like, "Hey, did you go to this?" I'm like, "No, Dad, I'm a 4 day man. I don't know what they did." But yeah, he's always been proud. And it also lit a little fire back into him because he kind of backed off for a long time.
Okay.
And then he's kind of gotten a little, he got a little bit more involved whenever I first got hired in Roanoke, and he's kind of died off some. He's kind of, riding the waves up and down at this point. But yeah, definitely. I mean, he's constantly calling me, asking questions, and what do you guys do on this? And how did this situation go? And all that. And then he's also throwing in the tidbits of, the old man knowledge of, yeah, you got to make sure you got a good water supply when you're doing this. And you got to, like, yeah, Dad, I got it. Yeah, I know.
Right.
It's my life at this point.
Right.
But
Right.
he did tell me, he told me after I got hired about a year in, he was like, "You know what, son?" He said, "I'm so envious of you." He said, "Seeing your love for what you do," he said, "I did not pick the right career." Because my dad was a cop for a while, and then he became a magistrate. He retired back in 2020, like 20 years being a magistrate judge. And he's like, "I definitely fucked up." This is what he told me. He said, "I definitely should have gone into the fire service more than just the volunteer route." But
But still, I mean, no, it's still great to see to have that because because like what the relationship you have with your dad and the fact that even though he's in the volley world, your career, but you also still volley too. Like you guys have that communication and you can talk about certain things like that. So I know that's got to be a really good feeling for both father and son to have that relationship.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Man, I remember. I had been out for like a year. I just got off probation. They had a pretty significant fire in Lewisburg that my dad. It was one of the few calls that he ran for the year, probably. That he went. It was in like a old nursing home, multi-story nursing home. My dad ended up getting a grab out of it.
Ooh,
And
okay.
he called me, and dude, I bragged to every fucking person I saw in Roanoke. Like, dude, I don't care what you say. My dad got a fucking grab in a nursing home, bro. He's almost 60 years old. Like, get your shit together. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
he's bragging to me. And then I don't want to say was fortunate enough. My rookie year, we got in a situation where my crew and me ended up getting a grab. At that point, it was like, "Yeah, Dad, you did it, but now so have I." You know what I
Right,
mean? And then it
right.
was just like the equal proudness that we both had of each other was just through the roof.
Awesome. It's awesome, man. I love hearing it. Love hearing the stories. Love hearing it. Matt, I really appreciate you coming on, man, doing this. I appreciate you accepting the invite. Got to give a shout out to Stacy, Stacy Wills for making this happen. It's guys like Stacy and other individuals I've met while doing this, that promote, hey, you need to talk to this guy. Everyone has a message, and I'm just here with a platform to get it out for others to hear, because I believe everyone's message is important. We all go through things in life that are going to challenge us. Nothing's easy. Life isn't easy. That's what I'm trying to instill to my daughter, as well as my wife. Like, if you want something, you got to work for it. You know, it's not nothing's just going to be handed to you. That's not how it worked for me. So, I just want to say, continue to keep fighting the good fight. Keep doing what you're doing as far as Bedford, the Forest area, as far as what that whole county does, because I'm a Buff, so I follow lots of things that you guys do. Always top notch, always on your game. So I just have to say thank you. Seriously.
Absolutely, brother. I greatly appreciate it. I'm sorry that this took a little dive off the training and
No, you're fine.
into a deeper aspect. But like I told you, it was something that I would have regretted if I didn't talk about it, because I do think that it's important that, I know everybody says that you're not the only one going through this stuff and all that, but it's true. And being there for each other, like I said, is the one way that we all get to grow old and tell old stories and talk shop when we're 80. So, thank you again. I absolutely love this podcast and the platform that you have. If you like buffing, look up RFD Buff on
I'm
Instagram
already following him, bro.
and Facebook.
See, I'm because he'll post the fires that you guys get. Yes.
So that's a good one. But yeah, man, again, thank you. Thank you for I'm honored and privileged. I don't feel like I've even done anything close in my career to be able to come on here and talk, but hopefully if anybody listens to it, they get a little something out of it.
Well, I think everything shows through your actions, man. You know, I don't think that there's going to be a pro aggressive department such as Bedford that's going to go, who wants deputy? Oh yeah, sure, man. Like, you have to earn it. You have to earn
Right.
it through your work and your reputation. So your last name speaks for itself. So that's why you're on here. And individuals like Stacy who are like, you need to listen to this guy, because there's always that one or two individuals that we have that is like, this person right here, they are who they say they are. They are doing the right things for the fire service. So that's why you're on here, pal.
I appreciate it, man. I
Yes,
appreciate it.
sir. Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Danny.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.